It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. International aid begins to flow in following Nepal's devastating earthquake. The World Food Program has begun the urgent need of distributing food and medicine around Gorkha, near the epicenter of last Saturday's devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake in Nepal. Helicopters are loaded with emergency supplies, including tents, blankets, and rice. Jeff Pinnock, an emergency officer with the WFP, describes what's needed.
More helicopters, more personnel, and certainly more relief supplies, including medical teams, shelter, tents, water and sanitation, and food are obviously needed.
Nearly 5,500 are known to have died from Saturday's quake and subsequent aftershocks. Twice that number were injured. Tens of thousands have been made homeless. With many frustrated by what they say is a slow response, thousands of people gathered in the capital, Kathmandu, looking to board buses to leave the city and reach their families in outlying areas. More street protests in Burundi Wednesday as demonstrators oppose President Pierre Nkurunziza's third-term bid in June elections, insisting it violates the Constitution. At least 6 have been killed in clashes with police this week. The UN Security Council has appealed for calm. U.S. official Tom Malinowski was to arrive in the capital, Bujumbura, Wednesday. Marie Harf is a U.S. spokesperson.
He looks forward to the opportunity to talk with Burundian officials as well as other Burundian stakeholders about the current situations and ways to diffuse tensions and create an environment for peaceful, inclusive, and credible elections.
That election scheduled to be held June 26. Malinowski, the Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, said he's disappointed Mr. Nkurunziza is violating the 2005 Arusha Peace Accord, but added that it's not too late to stay the path toward peace and democracy. This is VOA News. UN Special Envoy to Libya Bernardino Leon told the UN Security Council Wednesday he hopes the two sides in the conflict will reach a power-sharing agreement soon, perhaps as early as next week. He's offered a draft agreement to representatives of Libya's rival factions. Mr. Leon has been working since January on formation of a national unity government to end the chaos that's gripped the nation for 4 years.
There are two tracks that have not started to work yet. One is the security track, and we would like to have direct face-to-face meetings as soon as possible. And the other one is the tribal leaders or tribal sheikhs track that should start to meet also soon. So we have discussed with the council these issues. They have expressed concern, first of all, about the timing. The international community would like to see an agreement in Libya before Ramadan. Ramadan, as you know, starts on June 17th. So this is the ideal framework, and this is what I heard today.
Mr. Leon repeated there is no military solution to the conflict in Libya. Iran's foreign minister said the interception of a cargo ship Tuesday in Iranian waters was a commercial legal matter. Mohammad Javad Zarif, speaking in New York Wednesday, said the MV Maersk Tigris, a Marshall Islands flagship, was involved in a long-standing Iranian court case recently concluded over monetary claims.
It's not a security issue or a political issue. For us, freedom of navigation in the Persian Gulf is a must, and we are prepared not only to respect it ourselves, but we call upon all others to respect freedom of navigation. The ship was asked to come to port. It refused, and our naval forces took action to escort it to the port.
Iranian naval ships intercepted the Tigris as it was crossing the Strait of Hormuz, ordered it further into Iranian waters. When the ship's master ignored the warning, the Iranians fired shots across the boat's bridge and boarded the vessel. U.S. officials Tuesday called the firing of the shots inappropriate. Togo's main opposition leader Wednesday rejected provisional results from Saturday's election, securing a third five-year term for incumbent President Faure Gnassingbé. Jean-Pierre Fabre, his main challenger, called the results to be canceled. In Mali, gunmen exchanged fire with soldiers Wednesday, jeopardizing peace talks between the government and a Tuareg separatist alliance. Fighters from the Tuareg-led coordination of the movements of Azawad reportedly ambushed military posts in the central town of Lir near Mauritania. U.S. economic growth slowed sharply in the first 3 months of the year. Wednesday's report says the gross domestic product expanded at an annual rate of just 0.2%, compared to 2.2% in the last quarter. And Russian space officials declare an unmanned space station cargo ship a total loss Wednesday when it spun out of control shortly after launch from Kazakhstan. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The task of reintegrating nearly 300 women and girls rescued from Boko Haram has begun.
The life that they had before the Boko Haram terror campaign is going to be different, so people have to make an adjustment to a new kind of reality.
Fatima Akilu is a psychologist and counterterrorism advisor to the Nigerian government. A preliminary investigation finds the Chibok girls were not part of the rescue women and girls. Liberian police find themselves in a deadly tussle with commercial motorcyclists. And Zimbabwe's president calls on Africans to add value to their raw materials.
By exporting our natural resources in their raw form, we are not only earning marginal benefits from them, but are in essence compromising our efforts to create jobs.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, speaking Wednesday, addressing its SADC summit in Harare. Sierra Leone's ruling party defends a gathering of its partisans in Freetown while denying the opposition the right to do so. And the World Health Organization sees a global threat from resistance to antibiotics. And those stories, plus Mark Oman Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nearly 300 girls and women are now free from Boko Haram captivity after a raid by Nigeria's military. But as Chris Stein reports, some of them may have nowhere to go back to.
The identities of 200 girls and 93 women the Nigerian military says it rescued from Boko Haram in the Sambisa forest on Tuesday remain unknown. As part of its six-year insurgency, Boko Haram has kidnapped hundreds of people in northeastern Nigeria and neighboring Cameroon. Its most infamous mass kidnapping was in the town of Chibok, when the militants kidnapped 219 schoolgirls last year. Military spokesmen have been unclear on whether the girls rescued Tuesday are or are not from the town. Whoever they are, these nearly 300 women have a long journey back to normalcy. Psychologist and counterterrorism advisor to the government, Fatima Kilu, says many may not be able to go home because Boko Haram has destroyed their houses, families, or businesses, or continues to threaten their towns. Others may be traumatized by their time in captivity, Akilu says.
The life that they had before the Boko Haram terror campaign is going to be different, so people have to make an adjustment to a new kind of reality.
Akilu says the government is working to get the women medical care and connect them with counselors who can help them reintegrate into society. But their needs are many, and they still need to figure out where these women and girls are from and if they can even go home.
For us, it's really great that we've got them back, but it's going to take a while to get them to reintegrate it into communities that they left, because we don't know the state of those communities yet. They were only rescued yesterday. We don't know all the places that they've come from.
Human Rights Watch researcher Masi Sagun says the government needs to take steps so the rescued women and girls do not simply end up in camps for displaced people, where jobs and help are often scarce.
Many of the communities in the northeast are non-existent as we speak. And so releasing these individuals to either melt into the larger community or to go into IDP camps where the people already living in those places are living in abysmal conditions, it would be really tragic.
There are also issues of accountability. A senior military officer told VOA some of the women opened fire on troops as they were being rescued, then said they were forced to fight by Boko Haram. Segun said these cases should be investigated and given due process if charges are filed. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
A spokesman for Nigeria's military says operations to root out Boko Haram militants will continue in the Sambisa forest in the northeastern part of the country after the rescue Tuesday of almost 300 women and girls from Boko Haram captivity. Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman tells reporter Peter Clotty that a preliminary investigation shows that none of the Chibok girls kidnapped more than a year ago is among the rescue women.
We came about the conclusion based on preliminary investigations. But mark you, the processing is ongoing. Specialists are there, you know, first and foremost to make sure that they are psychologically stabilized because they have been traumatized, you know, after being abducted by these terrorists. And, you know, the operation is also ongoing. Remember, Sambisa Forest is a vast area. and there are a lot of terrorist camps. So far, we're able to dislodge four out of several others, and they are still on it.
Will this fight against Boko Haram continue, especially when there are suggestions that these terrorists have planted landmines to basically thwart the army's march towards rooting them out?
It will continue. The fight will continue till when we have completely routed out the terrorists in that environment, not just only in Sambisa Forest, wherever they are in the country.
What is the reassurance that the army is giving to Nigerians, especially when the report came out that these terrorists have splintered into different groups and they are attacking unarmed civilians on their way? They are being chased away.
I believe an average Nigerian is quite aware of the effort being done to make sure that the terrorists have been routed out. And of course, you monitor the media, you are a living witness as such to the past, within the last few weeks, the kind of successful operations that were carried out against the terrorists, and it will continue till it is brought to logical conclusion. Yes, it is true. Normally, you cannot have 100%. Remember, the composition of the terrorists, most of them, they are people that are familiar with the ground. They easily melt with the crowd and the people living there. So you cannot rule out the possibility of having one or two isolated cases. But beyond that, I can assure you that we are doing the best we could to ensure that terrorism, as it is known in the present circumstances, will be no more in the shortest possible time.
Now, so what can you say has contributed to the significant gains made by the military against these Boko Haram militants? Because a few months ago, it was like the terrorists were winning. What transpired? What made the difference? What changed?
Peter, you want me to leak out the Nigerian secret? I won't. However, I will just give you an insight. There is a renewed the improvement in the weaponry and equipment holding, and of course the renewed support, cooperation and understanding of the Nigerian society that, look, fighting terrorism is a collective responsibility. And of course the soldier needs all this support. Now it is available. We will make sure that we bring the war to a logical conclusion.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman is a spokesman for Nigeria's army. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. The long-running antagonism between the Liberian National Police and commercial motorcyclists turned deadly earlier this month when a police officer allegedly struck a motorcyclist with his baton, killing him. The officer had been pursuing the cyclist for violating an ordinance which prohibits this motorcyclist from plying certain areas of the capital, Monrovia. The police have denied their officer killed the motorcyclist. In protest over the death of their colleagues, the motorcyclist burned down a police station and destroyed other properties. A Liberian Senate committee has called for a meeting today, Thursday, between the police and the Commercial Motorcyclist Union. Robert Sami is Secretary General of the Motorcyclist Union of Liberia. He said the police officer who allegedly murdered their colleague should be disrobed and taken to court.
In most cases, the police have not been professional with the cyclists. They have been hitting them with sticks in the streets. In the Kingdom of Monrovia, you will see police officers with long 2x2 planks, sticks, baton. That's only for cyclists. So this is not the very first time. This is on set of grievances that culminated to the burning down of the police. So that should be the issue that we should have as a concern.
Why do you think the police officer went after this motorcyclist?
It is usual to see police officers going after cyclists in this form and manner because just came a time the government brought about some restriction that cyclists should not go certain places. So that is how, in most cases, if cyclists are saying certain places they think that they should not be, they are being chased after and they have been beaten down by police. We still think that that restriction was not participatory. That restriction didn't involve all our decisions and our own participation to our suggestion to the government how we could go about it.
What was any action taken against this police officer who you said killed a motorcyclist?
There has been nothing whatsoever done in that line. And that is the most frustrating part. What is said that we are emphasizing the Axum case over the murder of Asselin. The police officer has not been charged, but the government said, quote unquote, constituted a committee to investigate, which we think is a waste of resources because you have a chance of attacking persons, affected citizens, and you've been able to jail those people, but you've been able to bring in pathology to establish the death of the guy, as he's saying, that you're not the one that killed him. Then what is the reason why you want to constitute a committee to investigate what? When you've already run that decision. So we think that that committee couldn't say anything that we could understand better, except for we believe that the police really killed this guy.
Why didn't you go to the Justice Department to file this complaint? Why did you have to burn down police stations?
This is what we think is not the right way to proceed, and we really condemn that aspect. We could process the grievances to the justice system. But you see, Barty, the place where the police depot was burnt is a temporary area where the police have been seated. In fact, that those containers were put there at Omeo. In fact, the corner place are container site. But what we have observed over the years, since the departure of Omeo from that place, that particular location has been used as a hub of corruption of the police and abuse of the system, of the people by the police.
What would you like to be done with this particular police officer?
I think the police officer should be disrupted and sent to court, lying and foul to a question why he had to kill this innocent person. And justice itself in that manner, I think it will bring some level of trust in the justice system, thereby bringing more guarantee and trust into the justice system that will be able to make the young people that you can channel your grievances through the justice system and you will have justice.
Robert Sammy is Secretary General of the Motorcyclist Union of Liberia. You are speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and today is Thursday, April 30th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Partisans of Sierra Leone's ruling All People's Congress APC party are meeting today in the capital, Freetown, to strategize on giving what they call a final goodbye to the Ebola, now that the virus appears to be on the decline. At the same time, the authorities have been disrupting gatherings by supporters of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP. APC General Secretary Osman Yansane says the ruling party gathering is Ebola-related and in the national interest. He would not say, however, whether Ebola distinguishes between political parties.
As we come to the end of the fight against Ebola, because we are definitely sure the incidence of Ebola is receding, we believe we should call our citizens from all over the country to assist to give Ebola a final push out of our country and then plan for the post-Ebola recovery. The meeting is intended for us to consult with our membership all over the country and work out strategies to give the Ebola a final blow.
The question is that some people, particularly those who are in opposition to the ruling party, say, why is your party having a gathering when other people have been denied the permission to gather?
We applied to the National Ebola Response Center, and they gave us approval. We've been working in collaboration with them. We are not operating at variance. The police themselves use their discretion to determine which gatherings are going to be violent or non-responsive to the rules and regulations laid down by the health authorities, by the National Ebola Response Center. So as far as we are concerned, we are within the four corners of the law, and we believe also that it is in the national interest.
So the implications there is that, or the suggestion is that the opposition groups have not complied with the law, with their part of demonstrations. Is that correct? Or gathering?
Those who come out to publicly demonstrate using vitriolic and inciting words are different from those who apply to the police main opposition did, the police allowed them because it is confined within the four walls of a building. So we are saying that if they agree to abide by the rules and regulations laid down by the police, they'll be allowed to hold meetings.
Do the Ebola regulations of Sierra Leone, do they forbid the gathering of large groups of people?
Yeah. The issue is that you don't gather. You can gather as many people as possible, as long as it is Ebola-related.
Are you suggesting that Ebola, the virus, knows the difference between those who are gathering in its name and those who are not gathering? Are you there, sir? Hello, are you there, sir? Usman Yassane is General Secretary of Sierra Leone's ruling All People's Congress Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. President Robert Mugabe has told the Southern African Development Community SADC extraordinary summit that there is need for Africans to start adding value to their raw materials. Reporter Thomas Chiripasi has more from Harare.
Officiating at the opening of the SADC Extraordinary Summit, focusing on industrialization, SADC Chairperson and President of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, said Southern Africa is losing a lot of money by exporting raw materials. Mr. Mugabe said it is imperative to reverse this trend in order to achieve self-sustaining development in the SADC region.
By exporting our natural resources in their raw form, we are not only earning marginal benefits from them, but are in essence compromising our efforts to create jobs or diversify our products or even develop our industries, and thus ultimately exposing our economies to the vagaries of the fluctuations of the global resource markets.
Mr. Mugabe said SADC should come up with an industrial policy that prioritizes value addition and beneficiation.
It is therefore evident that our focus on reducing and eliminating tariffs has not brought about the intended socioeconomic development and well-being of our people. There is therefore need for collective action on our part to put in place effective strategies to boost the productive capacity of our industries.
At the end of the summit, the SADC leaders are expected to come up with a plan that would ensure reindustrialization in Southern Africa. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The World Health Organization says an increasing number of infections are no longer treatable because of growing antimicrobial resistance, putting the lives of millions of people at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The WHO study finds no region in the world is prepared to combat this serious global threat. Only one quarter of the 133 countries has a comprehensive plan to fight resistance to antibiotics and other antimicrobial medicines. The survey also finds public awareness of the issue remains generally low, and many people believe antibiotics are effective against viral infections. It says this leads to antibiotics being used when they are not required or effective, which can lead to resistance. WHO coordinator for antimicrobial resistance, Charles Penn, says the survey also shows the sale of antibiotics and other antimicrobial medicines without a prescription is widespread throughout the world. He says this increases the potential for overuse, thereby worsening the problem of resistance.
Without urgent action, the world is heading for what is being termed a post-antibiotic era, in which common infections and minor injuries have been treatable for decades, may once again kill. And we will lose the ability to treat a range of serious conditions such as bloodstream infections, pneumonia, tuberculosis, malaria, HIV, and the benefits of advanced medical treatment, such as cancer chemotherapy and major surgery, will also become much riskier and may well be lost.
Penn makes clear this is not a future problem. He tells VOA there are diseases and infections today that are no longer treatable with available antibiotics.
We often give the example of gonorrhea, where around the world there are examples of cases of this which do not respond to any of the antibiotics available to us. Another example would be hundreds of thousands of new cases of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis each year. Again, these are infections that have already become very difficult to treat. And it's difficult to put a precise number on what will happen in the future, but if we don't act, then it can only get worse.
A draft global action plan to combat antimicrobial resistance, including antibiotic resistance, will be discussed during next month's World Health Assembly. The plan emphasizes the need for improved diagnostic tools so doctors have clear guidance as to when to prescribe antibiotics. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Frenchman Luis Fernandez is the new coach for the Guinea national football team. He's tasked with qualifying Guinea for the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations, the Guinea Football Federation revealed in Conakry. Elsewhere, Johannes Salhe is Ethiopia's new coach. The Ethiopia Football Federation disclosed in Addis Ababa. Turning to athletics, a vastly improved South African middle-distance runner, Dumisani Klaselo, clocked a lifetime best of 3 minutes and 36.51 seconds to triumph in 1500 meters at the University Sports South Africa Athletics Championships over the weekend. While he is delighted at qualifying for the World Student Games, he narrowly missed qualifying for the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Klaselo says he hopes to face strong opponents at next week's South Africa Open Championships in Tlokwe.
It was the plan for me to run a fast time as we prepared for a couple of months for this race. It went accordingly, but it's just the only thing which I didn't meet is the qualifying standard for the World Champs, which is one of the goals which I'm trying to do.
Well, you still have an opportunity at the SA Opens. I guess that would be the next thing on your mind.
I'm a bit skeptical with that one at the SA Open because it's high altitude over there, and I don't think there will be many runners who are going to compete there, because in the 15, you need people to compete with. At least even here, if I had someone who's going to compete with me, it was going to happen that I can run at 335, 333, somewhere there. So, but I didn't have anyone. Almost the last 700 meters, I was alone.
Well, given that they allow foreign athletes there, and you know that some of these athletes from neighboring countries could give you some challenge.
But I'll see how the things goes, because I have to go back to training and prepare myself again for another good race.
That was Dumisani Klaselo, the South Africa University's 1500-meter champion, speaking in Stellenbosch, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Just our listener mail for this Thursday morning, April 30th.
I wish to congratulate President Jonathan and the Nigerian Armed Forces for a gallant rescue of about 300 women from Sambisa Forest. Even if the Chibok girls are not among, we are optimistic that God shall soon make the way out. I am Prince John Ushiem in Ogudugadu Ranch, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Authorities in France are investigating allegations that French soldiers sexually abused a number of children during a peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic last year. And that's it for this Thursday, April 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clutty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouman, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a good Thursday.
On Thursday, April 30th, VOA hosts a town hall-style meeting to discuss the South Sudan peace process. Moderator John Tanza and VOA's panel of guests will discuss what has been the role of the media, the involvement of the international community, how the peace process was conducted, and has it been inclusive enough? Join us for this event live on April 30th from 1800 to 1930 UTC by visiting voanews.com/South Sudan and clicking on the live web link. We welcome your participation with comments and questions. email us at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can tweet at VOA South Sudan.